We were filming the thing, right? And then I saw three Pontianaks in the park area. And then...
What I thought particularly interesting was when he started talking about it to his friend who had just gotten possessed.
The air within this space was not usual. You can feel the heaviness, the uneasiness around this area itself. And...
When the preliminary report came back a few days later, it said that it wasn't possible for Bob to have killed himself.
This is the voice of someone who's done it before, right? He's made these types of deals before, you know?
Is anyone here? What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
Welcome to the 2023 season of Supernatural Confessions podcast. We have taken a bit of downtime because we wanted to improve the quality of our content and also to streamline the processes of how we do things behind the scenes. My name is Eugene Tay. I founded this channel in 2015. And since then, we've been growing organically a little each year. We have had the era of the Baba Bros consisting of Team O and ET from episode 9 to 72. And then Kim, Sonia and JDC from episode 73 to 181. Each era brought a different vibe and energy to the show. With Tim and I, it was very much an interview style, and when ET came in, it expanded the discussion to include a tinge of science and skepticism to represent the demographic of viewers who are leaning towards rational thought. With Kim, Sonia and JDC, the show embraced the community with each host representing the voice of the people, ranging from the super rational to the superstitious. This year, we are going back to our roots of putting the focus on the confessions and really dissecting it with the depth and wealth of knowledge of the supernatural that John and I have. We know that our audience have grown with us over the years, and it's not enough to just blame it on the wind or to claim that it must be the Hantu. Our audience wants to know why and what it could have been. So I'm very excited for you to listen to what we have in store for you. You can get more featured video confessions and Friday Night Live shows on our YouTube channel. Search for Supernatural Confessions. We also have a Patreon page set up for fans who want to support the show. That's at patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. On this special pilot episode, to kick things off the ground, we have invited Team O back to the show to guest star in his previous role as an anchor host of Supernatural Confessions. Unfortunately, as prepared as we were, on stream day, my mic went kaput and we had a bit of technical error. I promise that in the rest of my future series, I sound a lot better. So I do apologize for the crappy audio quality on my part. Let's get on with the show. Introducing your host for this pilot episode, Jonathan Lim, Team O, and me, Eugene Tay.
Give us a bit of context. How long has it been since you've been hosting with Eugene?
I want to say, what, 2 years? Got 2 years now.
Wow.
Got two years, right? Because that was the what you realize, like every 2 years of SC, it kind of goes through a little bit of a reincarnation, a little bit of a reinvention. So I think ET, Eugene and myself, we started this, you know, about 4 years ago. And then after 2 years, we stepped away, and then you had another crew for 2 years. And then now you just like a phoenix, you've risen once again, just to let the audience in on what was going on prior to us going online. You know, Jonathan was going through the rundown. Okay, this person goes. And I was like, wow, this reminds me of back in the day, you know, when I had to put that rundown down together, and I was very OCD. I was like, okay, Tay, you talk, and then you talk for like 2 seconds, and then you say this word, and then next person, okay, then you say that you cannot clash, okay, you must wait until you finish talking, then the other person talk. And the reason why I was so anal about it, right, is because following the entire Facebook Live, I would be the poor sucker who have to cut out the audio for the audio podcast, right? And if everybody clashes with each other, then it makes my life a lot more difficult. But because I'm not doing that tonight, I don't care. Like, everybody talk all the time. Just clash, overlap, whatever.
Right. To kick off the very first confession for you, we have Siva talking about pantang at his workplace, especially in production. Let's take a listen to that first confession tonight, shall we?
Yeah, Siva.
Because I work in production, you know, last time, so we have had a lot of shoot where things happen that I cannot explain. There's one time we shot at you know, Little Guilin at Bukit Batok, right? The park outside. So I was shooting a short film there with my, that time when I was still studying in LaSalle. So we had like requirements where we had to make short films and all that. So there was one time I did a shoot in Little Guilin area, the park next to it, right? Halfway through the shoot, one of the guys got possessed. Out of nowhere, suddenly he started doing somersaults and making like you know, like wildcat noises. You know, like a kind of weird pose. Didn't look human at all. Started doing somersaults on the concrete pavement. You know? Like, what the fuck? So they had to. So the shoot was conducted by my classmate, right? Whose dad happens to be a bomo. So they had they did some calls up, and then like within 1 hour, like three Malay guys came in with like they're playing like Islamic music. So they brought him to the corner, then they started to calm him down and all that. And within like 15 minutes, he was back to normal. And then after that, like he told us, like when he started to speaking, right, he said like, oh, actually what happened was we were filming the thing, right, and then I saw three Pontianaks in the park area. And then immediately, I don't remember what happened. So apparently, he does Kuda Kepang, you know, where when something happens, right, the spirit, the leopard spirit. So the leopard spirit took over his body to protect us. So that's pretty much what happened. So that's the one of the most significant incidents I remember. First time I saw someone get possessed and doing all this stuff, you know. Normally you just read out a book, but I see it, I'm like, wow. The most common one, right, and this is standard across all religion and all culture, right, always ask for permission when you enter to a place that no one is staying in. So it could be an abandoned building, or it could be even a tree, you know, because the main belief is that spirits live in trees, you know, water bodies. You know, abandoned houses usually will have like you know, the tenants there to speak. So the most polite thing to do is like how you go to someone's house, right? You always ask if you want to do anything. So same thing, go to an empty place, always ask for permission. And I always do that. It's part of my own culture, but own ritual as well. I go to a place where I will say, okay, sorry for being here. I just want to come here and shoot for a few hours, you know, please don't disturb me. And always go smoothly. And I've come across shoots where they don't do this. A lot of nonsense will happen. Suddenly it will rain, suddenly got lightning storm, suddenly this thing will break, you know. So yeah, that's something in production that's very common in production. Definitely in Singapore, even in Vietnam as well, where I live now. I think most parts of Southeast Asia do the same thing as well.
Thank you very much to Siva for that. Now, a two-part confession. Obviously, the first part had to do with the possession case that he witnessed. Second part, of course, with the practices. And I think we're all going to have a lot to say regarding the Pantang practices and stuff when it comes to production. Particularly, I'm quite interested to hear from John because of his extensive background in theater. But if we could just start talking about the possession element of his video, right? Just to get some of your comments or your reactions to that. I mean, he mentioned his friend or his acquaintance got possessed, right? Started doing somersaults, acting like an animal. In fact, the first thing on my mind was that, was this like a monkey god possession? Because we always hear, I mean, you know, of like possessions or spirits, people acting like monkeys, crawling, climbing up. But as Siva would continue, he said they found out that this was a leopard spirit that he had been possessed by. Now, I didn't even know there were leopard spirits. John, what do you know about this?
I mean, the Hantu Harimau, the tiger spirit, is one of the strongest Malay spirits that often possesses people. So I suppose this is the relative, right? The cousin of the Harimau. In fact, it's called Harimau Bintang, right? If I'm not mistaken, a leopard. So it's the Hantu Harimau Bintang.
Really?
Quite uncommon.
That's what the Bintang in Bintang Beer stands for.
Maybe.
I did not know that. Right, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, a fierce jungle cat spirit, you know, would be a protector. I think the Chinese believe in jungle cats as protectors.
Okay, but obviously with this whole leopard spirit, I mean, which ethnic background would you tend to relate this to? You know,
okay,
Malays, Chinese, what?
For me, definitely Malay, because we don't speak too much about the tiger spirit in Singapore. Taiwan has a lot of tiger spirits, and it's quite often worshipped, right? And Hu Ye is also quite respected. So some people do get possessed by that. That's Taoist tradition. But
right.
I think the tiger spirit in Malay tradition is, I think, one of the stars.
Okay.
You know? Yeah,
okay,
so okay. A leopard would be a good supporting character, you know?
Okay. Kudang Kerpang. What is Kudang Kerpang?
Eugene, you want to explain?
Yes, Kuda Kepang is the actually it's a Javanese practice where the devotee would sit on a paper horse or a straw, yeah, horse made of straw.
Like a hobby horse.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they will go into a trance, right? They go into a trance. They will call different, I believe, spirits into their body. So I had
the horse spirit, actually, specifically the horse spirit. Yeah.
So I had one confessor on our YouTube channel. You go check him out. He talks about Kuda Kepang as well. And there is two camps to Kuda Kepang. And Kuda Kepang back in the 80s, even I think up to the 90s, was quite prevalent in Singapore. There were places where they were practicing, they had whips and they were going to trance, they were dance around. However, it is considered non-Islamic. And most of the practitioners for Kuda Kepang are Malay. So there was this tension between the practices. So I think you don't see Kuda Kepang anywhere in Singapore these days.
Okay. It's used a lot as a cultural showcase now, just as a dance, right? But I think the spiritual element, they have to keep it on the down low, lah. You know, I don't know how many sort of true Kuda Kepang practitioners still are. Yeah? But the clue for this story is because he was a Kuda Kepang practitioner, he's already susceptible to possession by animal spirits. That's what he regularly does. So I think if a leopard spirit came along, he would be the ideal candidate.
Okay. Now, what I thought particularly interesting was when he started talking about it to his friend who had just gotten possessed by this leopard spirit, right? And he found out that before he was possessed or he lost consciousness, couldn't remember what was happening, he had actually seen three Pontianaks, not one, not two, but three Pontianaks, right? And almost like a self-defense mechanism, you know, I don't know if he invited the leopard spirit into his body, but the leopard spirit came, possessed him to scare away the Pontianaks, right? Which I thought was very interesting. I had never thought or ever, you know, I've never associated possession with protection, right? And it just kind of made me wonder, maybe all these times, right, when people get possessed and we hear, we go, oh, that's terrible. Maybe it's actually a good thing. Maybe getting possessed by whatever spirit they got possessed by was actually there to protect them from something even worse.
I think what happens when, you know, sort of Hollywood or the movies take over the theme of possession is that it always becomes evil, right? Mm-hmm. It's always about saving the poor, innocent human being from the evil spirit. But I think, you know, the older generation know, right, especially from religious perspectives, you know, whenever you're possessed, it's because, you know, a guardian spirit or a deity has something to say, has something to do, and they do it by possessing people, right? That's a functional sort of practical aspect of spiritualism, which has been overshadowed by all the movies, right? So, yeah, I think this is what this story proves, right? I don't think he invited the spirit. I think maybe it's an ongoing feud, right? Leopards versus the triple Pontianak, you know? And so the Pontianaks were there trying to sort of, you know, hunt these people down, and then the leopard just, you know, so you can see it as sort of like a sort of Hantu Marvel universe, right? And there's this and then these are the poor film crew that got caught up in the middle of it and got used as a human shield.
And also, I mean, with a Kuda Kepang practitioner, right? I mean, in this particular case, it was mentioned that because he was a practitioner, you know, he was particularly susceptible to spirits. Now, I mean, I don't know, I don't have a lot of information about this, so I will have to defer to your expertise, but is it just one particular spirit you are susceptible to? Could it be like the leopard spirit today and another spirit tomorrow?
So, I mean,
depending on exactly what they're chasing away, then that appropriate spirit will then come into their bodies.
This one I got to answer. So not the Malay side, but I spoke to the Thai side, right? And apparently all of us, it's almost like a Red Indian kind of, you have a totem.
Hey, cannot say Red Indian.
Native American Indian.
Native American.
Yes.
Well, this is both culture and all of it.
Okay, Native American Indian,
right? You have a totem, and like if you are born under a certain auspicious star, you are a bear spirit. You have the fox spirit. You have the wolf spirit.
Yeah.
And the same is with this Thai practices as well. You have a certain dominant beast or a spirit that can possess you. So if you are someone who is fierce, you know, a military might, you might attract the bear or the lions. But if you like the kunyang, maybe it's like a house cat or a chicha. The spirit will come to possess you.
So does that mean choose?
Do you have a say in what spirit like enters
choosing
your body?
Spirit animal,
no,
yes, right?
You don't.
You have no say.
You have no say. The good thing is, I want to brag about this, right? I have a white wolf guardian that can.
You have a white wolf guardian?
Mm. Yeah. So I was told by
why must be white wolf? Is this for your inner SPG? Is it?
That's not a very Asian guardian.
White dire wolf.
So your white wolf guardian is very far away because it's in the wrong climate.
No, but you see, because in the spiritual world, geographical distance don't really matter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Well, in the Chinese world, we only have 12 to choose from. So this year, good luck if you're going to get possessed by a rabbit. The Pontianak will get you. Okay.
No, so the other thing about Pontianak, right, is I never thought of them traveling in threes. I always thought they were like apex predator.
Then what? I mean, if you compare them to vampires, right? Dracula had three, the brides of Dracula, three of
them,
right?
That's true. No, but also it's about being up against a leopard spirit, right? I think they have to gang up, right? You know,
but
again,
did they know that there was going to be a leopard spirit?
So this is my theory, right? So this happened at Little Guilin, right? Mm. Which was once quite wild, and then after that became a quarry, and then the quarry was abandoned, and then became sports complex, right? So this is a remnant of the wilder times, lah. Okay, you know when I think Pontianaks and leopard spirits chased each other through the jungle, you know, and we are stepping into possibly a centuries old feud.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the leopard spirit sees this as his territory, and the Pontianak are hunting in his ground, so he has the right to use whatever he can to possess them, to fight them, right?
Right.
But with the Kura Kepang thing, right? Because if he trains in Kura Kepang, then he would regularly call upon the horse spirit to possess him. Because that's what three times a week, you know? So he has to do that, right? So I think I don't think the leopard is his familiar or his animal spirit, but because of everyone in that group, the rest couldn't even see the Pontianaks.
Yeah.
The one that's spiritually attuned is obviously the first one, lah. You know, and maybe if the battle had gone on, they all would have been possessed, and then it would have been a finale end game kind of thing, you know, right? We don't know, right?
But it's a good thing they had cameras on standby. That would have made one heck of a feature, right?
Yeah, someone was asking in the comments just now, you know, where's the footage? But I think this happened before cameras roll, lah. Unfortunately, all the good stuff happens before cameras roll. Okay.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Eugene.
I think we all got a bit of a. Production stories to share. Right? I was just wondering what you guys have as well.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, moving on to the second part. I mean, like we mentioned, this video was two-parter, right? Number one, possession. Yeah. Number two, production. And the pantang, the rituals, the superstitions. Mm. And I'm particularly interested to actually hear from Jonathan because of his extensive background in theater. I've had some friends, of course, who have worked in theater as well, and you know, they've casually mentioned that yes, when it comes to productions, when you start something, when you go into a theater, even if it's a theater you've worked in a lot, every time you start a new production, there are certain, you know, practices, rituals, traditions that you will do again just to play safer. I mean, you want to have a successful run, so why take chances, right? Might as well just make whatever is down there happy, and hopefully you will have as smooth a run as possible.
I mean, there are two sides to that, right? It's the same for theater productions and for filming, right? Whenever you start a new project, you have to ask for blessing and protection, right? And if you're going
you
into
ask for
a
who?
New...
Wait, when you ask for blessing, protection,
so, okay, most of this would originate from the traditional Chinese. So we're talking about Taoist tradition, right?
Okay.
So, for example, you need permission from Tu Ti Gong because you are performing something in a particular area, a particular locality. So you want his endorsement, you want his authorization, you want his blessing, right? And then you will ask for any other sort of hamper full of blessings from everyone else, lah. You know, Guan Gong and Guan Yin, you know, and basically to keep everyone healthy, keep everyone safe, to bring the audience to you. I've even had ceremonies where they ask the gods to make the audience receptive to their message, you know? So really it's a lot of well-wishing. Mm-hmm. Right? But of course it's also partly psychological, right? Because it's really getting everyone in the team who turns up together to do the ritual together. I think that's a very important action, right, that they can take together.
And what auspicious. Do these rituals entail? I mean, you know, are there gifts? Are there burning?
Suckling pig. The suckling pig. Okay. Yes. Right. The full thing, right? There's a full... But that is more often done in filming because they got budget, right? So they call it the lensing ceremony, right? They also do that. They do that in Thailand as well, right? When they, whenever they start shooting a new series or a new movie, everyone has to come together and do this, right? And I think it's a good sort of cohesive camaraderie thing as well. Even those who don't believe, right? It has its effect on you, right? As a team, you know. So I think that's very special. But the other side of it is about being sort of courteous to the people, the spirits of the venue. Right? So this is where the theater side comes into it, right? Because theaters are notoriously easily haunted, right? Even if it's not got a regular ghost of its own, because it's empty all the time, it invites spirits, right? So there are things there and you have to share that space. So it's about, it's the same as knocking on a hotel room door before you step in and announcing your presence, you know, but because we're going to be there a while, we're going to be making a lot of noise. So please give us permission. Please, you know, enjoy the show, but don't harass my people, et cetera, et cetera. So that happens quite a lot in theater. Some people who don't believe do their own rituals lah.
Okay. But you know, my next question was going to be, I mean, you've done this enough to see when you do it, what were the results? And when you don't do it, what happens then? I mean, and more often than not, in your experience, when rituals, traditions were not respected, ceremonies did not take place, what were some of the, what were some of the bad things that happened, the not so good things?
Okay, I've been relatively fortunate because it doesn't happen to me, right? And the Singapore theatres are not too bad, right? Because I think Singapore theatres don't lie empty for long. Yeah. You know, NAC packs them pretty full. So there's not a lot of time for spirits to take over, right? So generally, okay, unless you have content in your show that invites trouble. So if you're doing something about the spirits, right? And that's something. So there was a show that I was doing in Chinatown, right? And it was performed site specifically. So it was performed in a shop house that was owned by the theater. And we wanted to do the show during 7 months, right? Because it was a little bit spooky, right? The show. And so they warned us. We had three priests that we consulted with. And so they warned us, please ask permission beforehand so that later on you have insurance. If anything happens, you can go back to the God that gave you permission and ask for his protection rather than wait for something to happen, right? So we went to the Tutikong temple and we asked for permission. We did the ritual, right? And we tossed the two wooden blocks, right? And we did it again and again and again, and permission was not granted. Wow. And the company was not going to go ahead taking such a risk, because not only are the actors moving around, the audience is moving around too. So they're, you know, they'll be at risk. Until we ask the monk at the temple to please intercede for us. Ooh. Right? And he had a long conversation with the Tutikong. Mm. And then he threw the two wooden pieces and he got asked permission.
Obviously when they were asking for permission and all that and they were rejected, right?
Yeah.
Were there reasons given as to why?
No, okay. It was very top down.
So how do they know that how do they know permission is not given?
So they have these two kidney shaped pieces of wood, right? Which they throw, right? Mm-hmm. And if they both fall the same way, it's a no.
I see.
If it's one up, one down, you get
it. And they kept asking and it kept landing in that same
repeatedly,
way.
Repeatedly. I threw them, the artistic director threw them, the writer threw them, and none of us could get a yes.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. So, after we did that, then we felt safer, lah, you know? And so it was sort of spiritual due diligence.
So after the monk interceded on your behalf, you guys threw it again and it both landed up.
He threw it and it got it right. So it was quite significant. Otherwise, we would have cancelled the show, you know? In filming, though, it does happen a lot, right? That if you don't ask permission, let's say you're going to an outdoor location or somewhere, you're shooting at night somewhere, you know? And if you don't ask permission, then the usual stories we hear are lights failing, cameras not recording, stuff like that, right?
Or if it's outdoor, it starts to rain.
Okay, so that one, I'm a bit skeptical because this is Singapore, so you can't blame anyone if it starts to rain.
No. I mean, we've done events long enough to know the whole chili and bawang thing, right? They stick it and then miraculously, right? You stick it at the corners of the area, then suddenly it doesn't rain, right?
That one is a deal that the Prime Minister's office has done with the devil, okay? There is more than chili. There's some deep Illuminati shit going on about that, okay? About the National Day rain thing. But I think, I mean, whether aside, you know, there are mishaps that happen, you know, equipment that goes missing, vehicles that refuse to move, stuff like that, right, has happened often enough, lah. So you don't have to think twice about taking precaution and being sure. You know, I think everyone does it, even if you claim you're not superstitious, but, you know, why take the risk, right?
Exactly. Why take chances?
Yeah.
All right. Over to you, Tay. Tell us what about your experiences and what you've done, you know, and how you tried to keep everybody safe and your production happy from, you know, from other factors.
Yeah. Okay, because you mentioned about the chili bawang. So I want to talk about that first. The chili bawang thing, it's very, very rare. Till today, at event location, and I have been privy to go behind the scenes to help out with event companies who are running big scale events, the chili bawang thing is real. However, that being said, really, the original idea of the chili bawang is it has to be planted by a virgin.
Yes.
But nowadays, right, because it passed on from generation to generation, people know about the chili bawang, but they forgot about the virgin part. Also, it's hard to find virgins in this life.
Exactly. Except me, yeah. The only one. I'm so chased.
In the air cloud, maybe more like it.
Chased by who? Chased by who?
Chased by all the ladies. But anyway, yes. Yeah, so it has to be a virgin.
Has to be a virgin to blast the chili bawang. Yep. And I can tell you for a fact, the chili bawang thing did not work. Because in Retrolicious 2014, they planted chili bawang. It rained like a mother.
Because the virgin lied.
Wait, were you the one who planted it? If you planted it, of course, lah, it will rain.
No, it's an intern. Because, I mean...
Then your intern lied.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, are you a virgin? Yes, I am.
Sure you are.
Okay. But the scary one, right, is actually the one I did in a drama center. And I was part of the Gunung Sayang
Old Drama Center or new drama center?
New one. The one at National Library. Right. And we were performing Peranakan show. So, you know, Peranakan show, I'm talking to my baba bro here, right? We always had a family drama. And the family drama will always involve a photograph of your ancestor on the wall, somewhere, somehow. Mm. Right? It's a Peranakan thing, right? Except this one time, they used a real photo of a deceased person.
Oh.
Not related to any of y'all.
To one of the crew, the cast member.
So it was related to one of the crew, though. Okay.
Yikes. Yes. Okay.
Hang it, thrill, the photo will fall off. Put it up, put blue tag, fall off. Tie cable, fall off. And then, same thing like what TO's production did. You call, or is it, I think, John, you call the spiritual master to come down and ask for permission. And he said, no, it was not granted. So we had to change photo. Couldn't go through the whole thing. Lights will go off, mics will go off, all the technical problems you can find. So in production, when you don't follow the will of the spirit, things will go wrong.
That reminds me of two things, right? So, okay, one, and this is something we saw in a short film that we discussed last year as well, right? The famous Hong Kong actor playing the vampire actor, remember? Right? Which is the giving of an ang pao. Yes, Richard Ng, right? Ooh. So in that short film, he was given an ang pao because his character dies in the film, right? And that's a tradition we still maintain in theater as well. If your character dies in the play, or if your image is used to represent a dead character, you will be given an ang pao to protect you from
anything inside the ang pao, no?
Yes, some small amount of money, depending on how rich your show is, lah.
Oh my god! Guys, speaking of dying, right? Remember the one story I had, Tim, I might have told you about this before, where I played a character that was got knocked down by a car and my body was dragged into Punggol. Remember the story?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Did you get ang pao?
The director was a Christian guy. His name is Ian. Didn't believe in any of these practices. And, I mean, if you go back to all the old videos, you can find the story. But long story short, I saw an old lady beckoning to me, standing at the edge of the mangrove swamp. I knew it could not be a human. I closed my eyes. I prayed.
See, I have long suspected. We joke about it. We call you the auntie killer, right? So even the aunties who are no longer of this earth, all people also after you two.
Drawn boy, by you.
Boy, boy.
I'm actually just surprised you didn't go.
You assume he didn't go.
You assume he didn't go. You were walking towards it and then someone called you back, right?
No. It was a sound guy because the sound couldn't work, lights couldn't work. And the sound guy was walking towards that same point looking for a cable. I called him back. I said, what are you doing there? Looking for a cable. I said, no one went there. Why are you looking for cable over there? And he goes like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm walking here. Then he walked back.
Maybe the auntie wasn't calling you. Maybe the auntie was calling him. Then you go and knock him. Terrible are you. This one, not bro.
Spiritual blocker. Okay. Not good. Not good.
Not a bro.
Anyways, it's already 10:45 on this time now.
Okay.
Wow, we went quite a bit on this one.
Yeah.
We have two more to go to. Shall we go for the second confession?
Wait, before we do that, I feel like we should get back to an old SC practice, right? And that is, what time do you think this live stream will end? Because in the past, we were very, very bad at, estimating what time. Because obviously, when we run through the program, right, the rundown, we see the confessions, the videos, and we go like, oh, okay, this one 2 minutes, this one 3 minutes, we talk 5 minutes. We're like, oh, okay, we should be done in 45 minutes. But when were we ever done in 45 minutes? So we started the show, okay, albeit a little bit late because of our technical issues. I would say we started maybe about 10:15, would you say? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
What time do you think we will be done tonight?
I'm guessing 10:40?
It's already 10:42.
10:40.
It's 11:40, 11:45.
Okay, 11:45, you think. Okay, we'll keep that down. John?
I say midnight.
Yeah, I say 12:30. Okay.
Okay, so, confession number two, come.
Confession number two is actually the one on YouTube. It was from this guy called AF. He was working as a paramedic, and in his job, he has to do shift duty, and he has to work with the ambulance. So he's new to the job, and instead of following what the Lao Chiaos are doing, where they're sleeping elsewhere, far away from the ambulance, he decided, why are you all so stupid? Sleep on the floor, sleep on the sofa. I'm going to sleep inside the ambulance. And he was told not to do that. But young guy that he is, he's, why are you so pantang? Why are you so superstitious? Just sleep there, it's comfortable. He slept there. Sometime at 3 a.m., he felt very uncomfortable. The temperature dropped drastically. He needed to pee. He got up, not a whole undertaker sit-up thing. He felt something telling him, don't turn around. And so he said, okay. He's just going to walk forward to the back of the ambulance, open up the door.
Ah, okay. Are you hanging, Eugene? Okay, carry on.
Well, I'm hung, but that's a different story.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. The moment you hanging us, I bet the next thing he's going to say is, I'm hung. I knew it. People never change, no. It's fine.
Opens the door, and then he decides to take a peek. I was curious, right? He turns around, saw a pochong sitting at a seat in the ambulance where his head was, where he was. He would be lying down, right? There'd be a seat behind him. That's where the pochong was. And you'll hear in the second story as well how he was called to go to a site somewhere near Guillemot and Geylang, and it's a place with a very dark past. Back in the 80s and 90s, there were gang fights there. People died. Apparently, there were a lot of illicit deals being done there. And when he arrived, there were two other people with him in the ambulance. He saw a silhouette. Okay? And when he opened the window, no one's there. But take a listen to this shortened version of that session to give you guys a bit of a recap, and then we can talk about this.
On the night before my father passed away, because he was doing his pilgrimage, I and my brother was in Singapore, my mom and my dad was doing his pilgrimage. I had a so-called dream, I would say, that my father came and hugged me and then waved goodbye. Then after which, I woke up and then minutes later, my mom called my auntie, which I was staying at that house at the point of time, saying that they have some bearer of bad news. Recently, or the most recent encounter that I had after a long time spent was during work. When I started to work with this government organization, I was working as a trainee. So probably along the way, you might probably catch which organization I'm working for. So I was training. So we have to dispatch and whatnot, and you have a certain time frame to exit the location or of your base operations and whatnot. So being at night, I don't like to sleep away from them because I'm a dead sleeper, heavy sleeper. So sometimes I have that fear that I can't be able to wake up for that dispatch assigned case or whatnot. I remember this vividly because it was my mentor said to me that try not to sleep inside the appliance, especially during this Hungry Ghost Festival, if I'm not mistaken. But you know me, I just say, nothing lah. So I slept on this, platform. This platform is commonly used to transport person, the place A to place B, so on and so forth. So this platform that you have here, it's theoretically people have died on it, people have survived on it. So I tried to visualize it as the back door is facing my direction, right? And the drivers are opposite me, which is facing the front, my back is facing them. So
let's say if you're lying down, the leg is facing the door, the head is facing the drivers.
Yeah, correct. So, but between there, there's a seat for any of the personnel or assisting personnel to sit and whatnot. Given that circumstances, I think it was about close to 3. I felt that it was really, really cold. Again, we didn't on the fan or anything inside the appliance itself. So the windows are slightly turned down, so wind can come in. Felt really chilly. Again, I was wearing my hoodie to sleep. And then I'll be like, okay, I feel like going to the toilet anyways. So I sit up. So sitting up, imagine my legs are this. This is my legs. I'm sitting up like this. So I'm facing up. When that was happening, I just realized that, did I see something behind me? It didn't register to me because, you know, sometimes you wake up a bit groggy and whatnot. Yeah. So you would say, I want to go to the toilet. I don't care about what's happening. So I felt like the room, the air within this space was not usual. You can feel the heaviness, the uneasiness around this area itself. And I wasn't like, something's amiss. The things happening around me wasn't making sense to me at a given point of time. Only minutes later, it did happen. So I was like, okay, I think I saw something right there. I was like trying to recall what my mentor said, that whenever you try to turn your body, you will turn in a certain direction or in pathway so that the light or whatnot doesn't affect you. I don't really can't remember for sure. So I rather not turn my head and just exit through the rear door. So,
are you talking about your mentor told you that human being has 3 candles?
Yeah, correct, something like that.
So if you turn your head, you knock the candle out, then the light will diminish and
correct.
Then hantu will come and find
something
you.
Something like that. Okay. So again, I don't know whether they take it seriously or not. But
you just didn't turn around.
Yeah, I didn't turn around. I feel like, should I turn around? Sometimes people say things to me, I'll be like, okay, you don't say don't turn around, I'll be like, okay, I'll do that. So this point of time, my head was saying, don't turn. Something is not right. So it felt like, okay, something's not right. The air is getting colder by the moment. The uneasiness, I'm getting very unsettled. So I wanted to turn to the right side to exit to the main door. But then my gut says that since you're just there, just go straight. Because the door is just swinging door. So I decided to do that. But then, again, the doors, when you open, you have to close the door. Close the door back. I had to turn around, right? So I had to, right? So what I saw was something which I would never want to see or never want to encounter, which is like Pon Chong, which is sitting there looking at me. So imagine that if I was sleeping, he was probably doing this to me. So given the circumstances, I was thinking that, so I was like, shit, close the door, I'd run. I was like, anywhere but run. Then I was like thinking, running away is not going to do anything, right? This entity can probably jump his way in front of me and whatnot. So I just close my eyes and just sit down facing the floor. That's the best option that I can do. Because again, I was this area was an open area. So
you turn around, you open the door, you saw the pochong, just to recollect, right?
Yeah, so everything.
You
like,
were lying down and your feet was facing the door. The
exit,
door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Behind you, and then where your head is, there is a seat.
Yeah,
right, so dividing between the driver area and you.
Correct.
So the pochong, when you turn around and you close the door, you saw that there was a pochong.
Exactly.
At that seat where your head is.
So imagine this is the head. This is the seat, probably a few centimeters back.
Yeah.
And the thing was standing and probably in my head, this guy was doing dumb while I was sleeping. Probably the good things that I did not open my eyes and see is like in my face. I would probably like feel myself and be like, oh, god damn this.
So when you closed the door, you went pinching, you went to pee and all?
No, I didn't think, I just slam the door and just run any direction that I think there's the most viable option to go, which was towards the back, or rather to open car park lah. So just ran there and just, why am I in the open area? It's like 3 a.m. like in the open area, people like looking, what is this guy doing in the middle of the, this car park? So it's like, you know what, I'm just going to act, nothing happened, just going to sit down and find a subsequently, a few days later, we went for a incident or rather a case that was given to us or dispatched to us. But when we arrived at this location, somewhere probably near Guillemard Road and Geylang, this area was well known to be an area where you wouldn't want to walk alone or wouldn't want to be when the lights go dim because you may see something, things may follow you. Or that's what people say lah. But then, with about 5 to 10 minutes, you couldn't find the person or rather this person or rather this incident or whatnot. We went to the ambulance itself. There is like a panel set. You can see window panels at the side and front. There is, you can so-called see through, it's translucent. But there is always a light because of the bars and or the KTV. So it's very clear-cut if you were to see someone walking towards this appliance itself that we are in, you will see a silhouette of it. So initially we see like, we see a silhouette. Three of us were in this back of this appliance scene, we're just talking and having our dinner. What's the dinner? Probably supper. You see the silhouette coming towards the back of this appliance, at which it stopped. You can see as if that you can see an outline of this shadow. And this outline of shadow was just gazing through, but you just don't know what is it because it's quite, inside is bright, outside is dark, and again, you cannot see a figure unless you open the door. Then after which, a few seconds later, just turn to the right side of this appliance and to the main door that we can enter. You see the silhouette come through, and then the door, person is really at the handle of the door. And you can hear someone knocking. So I was facing the opposite direction, or I'm facing the door. My senior rather was sitting beside the door, and the other access personnel was at the so-called platform, the head there lah. You heard. So, the first thing my senior said, do you hear that knock? I said, yeah, I hear. Yeah, so do you want to open up? Because probably this is the person that you're looking for or not. Then she was saying that, nah, I don't think so. This is just off in a way that, who does that? Who would walk towards this appliance, to the back of the appliance, stare, but you can actually open the back of the door. There's a doorknob there. But then you decide to go to the front. And this vehicle is stationary. Makes no sense. We were like contemplating whether they're opening because the silhouette is still there. Again, we hear another knock 3 seconds later. So my senior decided to just open the window panel. You try to imagine that the silhouette is there. Then you open the silhouette, the window panel. There is nothing there. And you close back, the silhouette isn't there. The silhouette was directly at the middle of the window. So if I were to open up, even if he were to turn left or turn right, you can see the silhouette itself, but it's just transcends to nothingness.
And all three of you saw it?
Yeah, all three of us.
All three of you heard a knock?
Yes. So when we went back to our base of whatnot after the incident and whatnot, so we try to make sense of things. Again, sometimes things doesn't make sense. So what you can do is just assume or go into a hypothesis and whatnot. So we couldn't sleep. That was probably around 3 and 4 a.m. So the three of us like brainstorming to find a cause of it. Could we have said, heard it wrong? Can we have seen it wrong or not? But it seems otherwise lah. Because again, if three persons say the same thing, then okay, if one person says something, the other two say no, then probably that's debatable. But this is the three of us, close proximity, hear the same thing, saw the same thing. Then it's just, this cannot be right. So the personnel who is coming from the day shift itself, we hand over to them and said, oh, he was saying, hey, what's pondering, what are you guys pondering about? Then he said that, okay, this is what happened, so on and so forth. So I said, oh, you encountered something. I was like, your face tells me that to you this is normal. Then, he said, probably. This is probably, if I were to give a scale 1 to 10, probably this is number 1. I was like, if that is number 1, I wouldn't want to know what's number 5 or number 10. Then I'll be probably shitting my balls. I'll be like, ugh. Then he said, 10 is when you hear the boy that you're supposed to find is crying underneath the toilet sink and he says to you something, just bend over, look at you in the face. That is a 10.
Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Confessions podcast. If you are enjoying the show and would like to support our efforts, you can help by giving us a 5-star review. or by becoming a patron by signing up for a monthly membership fee that starts from as low as $5. Check out the perks at patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. That's patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. Or if you feel like showing a simple gesture of appreciation, you can buy us a cup of coffee or two at buymeacoffee.com/superconfess. And now, let's get back to the show.
Where was he when all this was taking place?
He was sitting, he was lying in the ambulance where the patient...
Oh, this was, it all happened in an ambulance.
Yeah, where the patient
the
would have
is
been
so
lying.
Big,
huh?
No, ambulance is so big, you can, like, got so much space to take a nap.
So
I mean,
there's just enough space for basically the trolley, right? Which is for the patient, and then a chair for the whoever's looking after him, right? The paramedic.
Right.
So instead of sitting in the chair where he should normally have been sitting, he was having a lie down.
Right, okay.
And I think the pochong was in the chair that he would have been sitting in.
Why do we assume the pochong was in the chair? Maybe
there's
pochong
no other place to sit.
Was also,
he said the pochong
was also lying down.
No. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, by the time he went out and he looked back, the pochong could have moved a position already. He may have actually been lying down on top of the pochong.
He felt slightly bumpy mattress.
You know what was scarier? I think it's scarier if the pochong is standing up and looking down at you as you're sleeping.
I suppose. But once again, I'm just trying to figure out the space of it, right? So, I mean, he's assuming that pochong, because there is a chair, that if you were to sit in a chair, you'd be looking down on the patient who would be in the gurney?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. But when he got up, he opened his eyes when he got up, he did not see anything. It was only when he had to close the ambulance door behind him, that's when he looked back and he saw the pochong.
Because when he got up, he was looking in front. He didn't look behind.
Yeah.
Yes, but if the pochong is looking down on you, you open your eyes, you will see the pochong looking down, right?
Probably headbutt the pochong now.
Maybe. You reckon, I mean, this pochong is the spirit of someone who passed away in that ambulance?
I don't think so. I don't think so because there's a clash of laws here. Right? I can totally believe that being a frequent place of death, you know, the ambulance is full of things, right? You know, and residences. But a pochong wandering in is really just something that was passing by and got curious who this person is who's sleeping here and decided to take a sit, you know, just take a sit down and look at him, you know. And I don't think it's related to the ambulance.
Right.
In this
instance, the pochong was on the prowl for people who are about to, you know, pass away, right? And he saw this person lying down, AF lying down. He thought he was on the brink of death.
Could be. Yeah, could be. Eugene, what do you think?
Not too bad, Tim. After so many years, not coming up with your own hypothesis. I love it.
Years of experience, my friend. Years of experience. But what do you think of the pochong confession?
Okay. Now, when you think about pochong, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with what pochong is a Malay entity. And it is an entity that appears to the victim wrapped in white burial outfit, which is the Malay burial outfit, right? White cloth, just see the face, the black color. Mm. If there was a pochong, if someone had died in the ambulance, it would not be in the form of a pochong because you would find that in the funeral home.
Yeah.
But then there's also this school of thought, and it's actually covered by a lot of people on the comment section. So go check out the YouTube video last week where you hear like Michael, AD, Guitar, Disgust, and ME74 talking about it. They were trying to discuss about this particular incident. Why do we see pochong? Why did he see pochong? Why did he not see something else? Or is a pochong even relevant to the ambulance? Now, my belief is that we see through a lens that frightens us the most, that is most relevant to us. Like if I see a Victorian headless person in the ambulance, I'm not going to get scared. But if I see something that frightens me, in this case, maybe a giant cockroach, that fear elicits a different response. So for him, because he's Malay and the pochong is probably the most top of mind of what he's fearful about, he sees that spiritual thing, the signature of a spirit in the form of a pochong. It could very well be someone with a third eye stands beside him, sees something else. So to me, it's not that he sees a pochong. I believe he saw an entity there, but what he sees through his lens is interpreted as a pochong, which is what he's afraid of.
Okay.
I mean, It makes a lot of sense because a pochong fundamentally, right, you know, based on the old descriptions, right, is really just a white shape, right? And actually, even the black face exposed is a cinematic tradition. The real pochong has nothing exposed. And it's bundled up and knotted at the top. So even its limbs are completely encased inside the cloth.
So from the top, it kind of looks like it's wearing a beanie, la. Kind of like the one you got.
Yeah, it's the beanie on top, and then it's like a Santa's bag of gifts at for the rest of the body, right? It's just this white sack, right, basically. So if he saw a sort of relatively shapeless white thing, that would say pochong to anyone, I think, living in Southeast Asia.
Okay.
You know, who is familiar with that kind of hantu.
Yes.
Right? You know, because there isn't even the hint of black to signify hair, for example. Mm. If he had seen something black, he would have gone with Pontianak, for example.
That's true.
Right? Okay. So I think the fact of the pochong suggests that whatever entity he saw was a pure white thing, which then other people will say, oh, maybe it was an angel. Maybe it was a guardian spirit. It could have been anything, but you're right.
Yeah, but I also think it comes down to, you know, to your nerves, right? To your feeling. I mean, most people
believe,
right? Yes, but you see, most people believe, right, that if if you encounter something positive, right, like an angel or something like that, you'll feel calm, a sense of calm. You will feel serenity. You will feel peaceful. But for him, even before he saw this white figure, he said, I already felt something was weird. I felt the inside, it was getting colder by the moment. So I don't know if it was all those other things were impacted or influenced based on what he saw or the other way around.
I reckon it's the other way around because he knew he shouldn't have been sleeping there. He knew he was doing something.
Guilt.
He knew he was doing something pantang. Right? We're back to that, right? Every time you commit a pantang or you do something that is pantang, you're already standing by to be punished, you know.
Maybe
at some
it was
level.
Maybe it was one of his colleagues being a dick. Seriously, they were like, look, it's AF. He's sleeping. Hey, you watch this. I'm gonna dress. I'm gonna sit in there, right? And you see how long it takes before he wakes up, and then someone turn on the aircon, make it very cool.
Okay.
You know why Tay is laughing? Because this is what he would do. He would totally do that.
Oh yeah. I did that before. I tried to prank some people in Old Changi Hospital, trying to scare them and all. With regards to this particular confession, I believe that what he saw, because you said that it was a power suggestion. He knew it was pantang, he knew it was wrong, and therefore he went to sleep thinking, and it's part of that guilt.
Subconsciously. Yeah.
I'm thinking on the other end of the spectrum, because for people who are already pantang, let's take all three of us, right? We are not about to do something, even if we don't believe or we are a bit more modern than our parents, to do something that is clearly pantang. So for someone to lie down in the freaking ambulance, you are probably not even afraid to begin with.
Not true. He's choosing to suppress the fear because he wants to rest. He wants to sleep, right? What is consciously needed is far more important than a faint subconscious anxiety just because your friends. I don't think he's a strong believer in the pantang, but it left impression.
Yeah.
Enough of an impression for his mind to go, it's very cold, it's very silent, I must be wrong.
Then it triggers.
Correct. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse, right? You know, and because, don't forget, he was thinking, I shouldn't turn around. He is clearly in a state of fear and panic.
Okay.
So what are you saying? That all this was a figment of his imagination and that there was nothing supernatural in this particular...
could totally have been something there, but there's also the possibility that he suggested something to himself. Because I'm curious what the follow-up is, you know, right? Was there anyone else around? Did he show the pochong to anyone else?
What did he do? Did he get... He GTFO'd, right? He got up, but did it follow him? Like, what happened?
What happened after that was he GTFO'd. He didn't even go to pee. He just slept outside the car park on the tarmac.
Can still go back to sleep.
But that's not the ending. The ending is when they opened the door, was it still there?
No, he did not. He did not check anymore. He just...
And so the ambulance is still parked down there somewhere.
The next morning...
I'm asking for the ending that's not in the confession, Eugene.
What happened
to the locked door, the closed ambulance with the pochong in it?
Then the post-credit scene.
He did not mention what happened after he went to sleep. He woke up the next morning, but I can make an assumption that in the morning, when people come and check the ambulance, nothing's there, lah.
The very fact that the very fact that someone just saw a pochong in an ambulance, closed the door, went to sleep, and then didn't talk about it, didn't report it, didn't call his friend and say, "Hey, don't go in. There's a pochong in there." I think he also half suspects he saw something that might have been a figment.
No, because he did
not react the way you reacted if something actually happened.
No. Don't talk about Eugene Tay reacting, because I would react quite differently. I'll first thing I take out my handphone already and I start filming everything. Right? But most people and most of the confessors actually come to us. Really, when they see something, they're not going to react in a way of, "Hey, I see a ghost, guys." They're not going to react to acknowledge the ghost. Most of us, and I like to see the comment section, right? Hold on. Guys, let me know in the comment section if you would actually react to seeing a hantu, or you would choose to buat bodoh. I think most people actually buat bodoh. They were just
His place of work. He has to get back in tomorrow morning. In fact, to get out of wherever they parked the thing, he has to get back in and ride in that same...
I'm sure there was some sort of follow-up, right? Even if he wasn't on shift the next day and somebody else had to take over and they had to use that vehicle, he'd probably check with them, "Hey, when you went into the ambulance today, anything out of the blue at all?"
He would ask, but he would not warn it and tell anybody. He would just let it happen.
I imagine he would have told you.
The fact that he's quite okay with telling you suggests that he could have told his colleagues.
Okay. John. I'm beginning to realize this based on his face, right? Eugene is like, I should have asked these questions. I completely forgot to ask these questions during the interview. And he's like, maybe I should have asked. Stop stressing me out. I didn't ask already. Then he'd be on his phone later and WhatsApping. "Hey, bro, you remember that time we did the..."
So we look forward to part two of that confession, sequel.
Okay, but the second confession that he gave was actually a lot more compelling, because this time there were three people in the ambulance and all three saw it and all three heard it. And he even put it in the confession. He says there was absolutely no way that you could see a silhouette behind a frosted mirror, a frosted window. When you open up the window, there's no one there. And you look left and right, there's no one there. You couldn't have disappeared. And when you close it back, no more silhouette.
I have a theory about this, right? Okay, so we thought it was a silhouette, right? And then you think someone's behind the glass, so you open and nobody there, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what else happens in this kind of situation? What else could give you that same kind of effect? If that image that you saw was not a silhouette of something outside the ambulance, if that image, that silhouette, was a reflection of something that was inside with you.
Okay, wait, Eugene, don't get excited. Okay, it's frosted glass. It doesn't reflect.
Really?
There's a reason it's frosted.
No. Yes, but there's no reflection. You might see like some sort of shadow or something. You know what I mean? I'm not asking you for a crystal clear reflection showing all your features
only,
and all that.
Okay, so that only happens with frosted glass if the light source is behind the thing. Yes, correct. Yeah. So to get an image of you inside the ambulance on the glass, there has to be a light shining behind you.
Was the light not on? Maybe somebody got a phone. He did say that
in his confession, there were like karaoke and massage parlors with their neon lights coming up from the back, and you could see the silhouette and the neon light behind. So clearly it's outside, so it's not inside. But good one.
Okay, I tell you what my theory is. Okay, because this is Geylang, right? This is Geylang Guillemot, which is my neighborhood. Okay.
Okay.
And there are a lot of small streets, and there are a lot of sudden turnings. All right, between connecting these streets. So if you parked your ambulance near the corner, right, of one of these turnings, and a car comes by, and there's someone standing, say, across the street, it will cast their shadow on your car, just for a brief moment. The headlights. And then, of course, there's no one there because the person is nowhere near, probably walked away already. Right, and I've seen it happen, sort of, but not from the inside of the car. But I've seen it happen on the surfaces of other cars.
Okay.
Yeah, my shadow gets cast on cars across the street.
Okay.
Know? So one possibility, but there was a knock.
Wait, Odessa, oh. Yeah, but hang on. Before we go there, I was just reading through the comments, right? Hello, KK Heng. KK Heng says, maybe that what they saw was a stain on the frosted window. Could it be a stain? I mean, I don't know what they were doing in there that they would stain the window.
I would explain that you're wrong. There's Ghost Warrior asking a question as well.
He said it wasn't the, it wasn't there when they closed the door again, right? Or maybe it was a leaf that stuck there and then fell off when they opened the door.
Okay, so for this one, right, and let me give you a bit more details to the question, because this is this was actually talked about in last week's video. It actually appeared on the back, the back door, right, on the panel, and it was head, shoulder, and then it moved from the back to the side. So this would have debunked your idea about a shadow that was actually casted onto
The shadow would move because the car is moving.
Correct.
The car casting the shadow would throw the shadow.
But from the angle where the shadow is moving, it moves towards the side, not away from the road. You get what I mean? Like if it was away from the road, I get it. Because shadow would just, as a car moves, the shadow would do this and then it fades off. But it walked from the back to the side and it stood there, solid as a rock. And then when you open up, it disappears, it goes back, nothing there.
Okay, so are we cleared with this particular confession?
Yeah, I'm good with this one. I mean, let's take a look at what people are saying on the comment section. I didn't get to read the comment section. Anything interesting, guys?
There were people who were agreeing that it could have been something cast from the inside or from the outside. So both both Tim's version and my version are possible.
You know, for 2 years, I had to deal with Sonia Corona being the super rational person. I thought, finally, you know, I can get like a... Someone was saying just now in the comment section, tonight it's all Team Hantu. Where's the Team Hantu? I'm the only one, Team Hantu.
Well, look, you know, Izzy Matt says that the person casting the silhouette could just have ducked.
No, cannot. They said, because they look around, there was no place that the person could have. Unless the person just was really, really fast. And just even that is not natural. So I'm going to give this
Maybe it was a definite.
I give this a 5-star Hantu rating.
Even HDB frosted windows, it says here, Night Owl, you will see the same effect if your HDB is near the main road.
Hey, what do you think? I mean, you're the neutral party here. You've done enough dissection. What's your take on this?
I want to know, right, this this particular confession, or this particular encounter, right, did it take place before or after his experience with the Pochong?
After.
Okay. So, he's already had, let's just assume, right, that the Pochong was the first scary incident that he's had, right, and that in an ambulance, right? I'm sure it's something that he remembered for a very long time, right?
And in this one happened shortly after, so...
Okay, all right, so it's still very... I would still... imagine he's dealing with some sort of trauma from that experience, right? Then something like this happens. I feel like the first thing that your mind would go to is it must have been something supernatural, you know? And I think if you already have it in your mind that it's something supernatural, almost all the evidence that you look for after that will kind of, you'll look for stuff that's kind of skewed towards the fact that there is something supernatural about that ambulance.
Three people saying the same thing? Now, this is not...
Maybe he had told them the story as well. Maybe prior to them having this experience, he was just recounting, hey guys, last time I was in the ambulance, right? Well, I was sleeping on the gurney, I opened my eyes, right? And then after that, I saw Pocho. I mean, if they were already having that discussion, right?
Once, he freaked them once out again, some more.
Suggestibility, right?
This is a lot more far-fetched. Like, it's a lot hard. It's like, I would grant you that about susceptibility. If you tell someone something and then they all hear some noises and they'll get spooked out. But this one was a silhouette moving from the back door to the side. And when it's open, it disappears. And then when
HQ, what happened?
They were talking about that and a senior came down and go like, oh, Gulima Gelang down there famous for such things. And he said that as a Lao Chiao, what they have experienced is a 1 upon 10 on the horror rating. They've seen a lot worse. That particular location, the Guillemard Geylang area, that stretch, he told me where it was. And so if you guys want to know, I can tell you off camera later on.
I will camp there and wait for this thing.
I don't want to lower the property prices of the place. So there were incidences of phantom suicides. Not reported by one, but by many. The residents, as well as the paramedics, as well as the neighborhood police, people who are the police were on duty in the area. They said, "Oh, the phantom suicide." Yeah, people were here.
Hang on, what do you mean by a phantom suicide? A phantom like suicide? I'm thinking like suicide that didn't really take place. What do you mean by?
You mean the echo of a suicide, right? That happened.
Yes. John said. People would see someone jumping off, heard the scream, heard the thud, walked there, nothing.
It happened to when I was a child. What? I heard a scream going past my window. I was about, I don't know, 11, 12, right? I heard a scream going past my window. I looked out the window. There was nothing, right? And when I thought back, the thing that disturbed me was that the scream was growing in volume, became loud, and then faded again, as if it was moving through the air.
Like,
it felt like it was going past
your window?
Yes.
Oh.
So it wasn't a consistent scream like if the neighbor was next door or something.
Okay.
Right? Because if it's a neighbor yelling, then, you know, it's still in the same flat, right? So there will be a certain consistency. But it was only loud for a brief moment. That's why I woke up. And then I heard it fading away.
So go check it out. I will tell you guys where it is. John?
Yeah. Bulimak,
Geylang, that's your area.
Definitely. I will cycle there tonight. Yeah.
Okay. Now, 11:15, I think you might be right. We are probably approaching more towards 12. Okay, docs.
Hey, by the way, before we carry on, right, I saw a name pop up quite a few times in the in the comments. Someone's birthday today, isn't it?
Tan Shi Min.
Is this the same Tan Shi Min from last time?
I think she's still studying, though.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Graduated already now, Tan Shi Min. Like, 4 years already, you know.
Because she keeps spending time watching us, so she's taking a lot more time to finish.
Tan Shi Min,
happy birthday!
Guys, do not know it's a birthday today. Happy birthday, Shi Min!
I think you need to sing a happy birthday song, lah.
Tim, you sing because you know how the mic doesn't sync very well, so we all can't
sing
together.
I sing, you dance. You do sexy dance. Timo sing, and then you do sexy dance. Are you ready?
Yeah, and I drink. Okay.
Okay. Ready?
Here's to you, Shi Min.
A one, a two, a one, two, three. Happy birthday to you. A happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Tan Shi Min. Happy birthday to you.
Woo!
You are very old.
I want to give a big shout out to Joel Goh. Joel Goh is another one of the Lao Chiangs like Tan Shi Min back in the 2019 era when we first did our, when we first got onto live stream. Very first time, I think, right before COVID, right? Right before COVID. COVID was not even a thing then. We were cooler than COVID. So Joel Goh, who's right now flying rescue, he's in India, he's about to go to work. So I think he's not watching this, but he cut a nice video for you, Tim.
Oh, really? Okay.
Alvin, hit it.
Ooh. Oh, and I brought this up many times to ET. Maybe we can get ET to conduct the interview. I mean, ET's got, he's got this, swagger about him. He's got that low, sexy voice.
So, how are you doing?
He says things that make the women go wild. He'll lean up to you. He will... get his lips very close to your ear, and then he'll go, EMF. Pants is wet.
Oh my God.
This Joel is out here.
Okay, E.T. is, I don't know, Timo, I don't think E.T. told you this, because I just met E.T. a few days ago.
Yes.
He's coming on the show as well.
Good. I'm glad. Why isn't he on tonight?
Because we feel that with John talking so much, you talking so much, having ET, this show is going to last at 3 a.m.
No, you know what I feel, right? If you were to juxtapose, right? If you were to juxtapose, like, ET and John, right? together, it would be amazing, right? Because E.T. also can grow out like a lot. He's quite hairy also, right? He can. Yeah, they would have like
no hair here.
No, I'm talking about the chin and the face, la.
Down here.
Put together, oh, okay, right? Okay. They would have like the ultimate beard.
Okay, so we're gonna have team beard versus team Pehor.
What?
What?
The white tiger spirit.
Oh.
Okay.
Was that you trying to speak Chinese? Don't, bro. Just stop. Stop right there. I know we final weekend of Chinese New Year. Chap Gome, right? Don't speak Chinese. Right?
Bloody hell. Anyway, we got one more video for you, and this one is you and me. And let's play it first. Let's talk about it after that.
And making a sound. I'm not sure what sound it is, but Syed Wilson says the gamelan sound, or is it a
gamelan?
Gamelan sound. Oh, gamelan. I assume. Because I read Gemma's message. She says, I know why her hair messy. She just.
Why?
Gamelan. So I thought she just gamelan.
How did we not get cancelled after that episode? Seriously. Okay, we must apologize because. Different times when we were doing that episode, okay? You know, sensitivities were of a completely different nature altogether. We do recognize in this day and age, content like that would be viewed as completely inappropriate, and we apologize.
That's not to say it doesn't happen still, but yeah. But we apologize.
Yeah. But I mean, that was like two, three years ago. I mean, you can tell also the difference in production. Our cameras were awful. Like, how did we ever get by with anything less than 1080p?
Oh, man. Yeah,
well, that was fun. Thank you for the take back memory lane.
We're going to go with our final confession this night. And instead of having it pre-recorded, I thought you're going to have Team O with his sexy radio voice. Read this.
Out. Okay. So, read this story from Uncle Chan, is it? That's the one?
Yeah, Uncle Chan.
Okay. It was around 7 plus in the evening. Almost 8. It was getting dark, but there was still a bit of light left. The other workers saw a silhouette of a man walking towards the tree from the work site. This, by the way, takes place around the construction site, okay? He was wearing a work helmet and safety vest, so he was not immediately recognizable, but the workers knew each other well and could guess who it was. No one paid him any mind. After all, they were all grown men and the workday had just ended. And the workers were busy packing up, so no one thought much about why Bob would go onto the site where they were specifically told it was out of bounds. It was not till someone saw Bob draw out a parang to chop himself in the neck, that there was a flurry of commotion. The workers dropped what they were doing and they ran towards their friend. The first few who arrived tried to stop him, but Bob continued chopping away at his own neck. And it took a considerably long time before Bob collapsed to the side in a pool of his own blood. By the time news got to me and I got to the scene, Bob was cold and lifeless. Police and paramedics were called in, and a full investigation was conducted. When the preliminary report came back a few days later, it said that it wasn't possible for Bob to have killed himself. The force of the blows and the depth of the cuts were not possible to be self-inflicted. But this went against more than a dozen eyewitnesses' accounts. Now, the police didn't know what to classify this as, so they just went with an unnatural death. Now, I was in my container office going through the report, and I really felt uneasy, as if I was being watched. Construction had stopped for a few days, so the site was quiet and empty. And on our own, we were also investigating the incident by speaking to the co-workers. Bob had no reason to kill himself, la. He wasn't married. Therefore, he had no marital or financial problems. He got along well with his peers, and he'd been working for only 3 years in Singapore, and I couldn't find any logical reason for this sudden behavior. The problems, however, just began. The whole week, workers in the dorm started reporting having nightmares, seeing the dead worker coming to visit them. Each of them had the same vivid dreams where Bob would stand in the corner of their dorm and try to reach out to them. But they couldn't make out the words he was saying. Now, on the evening of the seventh day, I had an urgent call from the dorm manager. One of the workers got possessed. So I decided to call up the Shifu, who we hired to bless the place, and I told him what happened. Now, he rushed down with his assistant, and they did a ritual, right? Had the red strings, the bells, and the candles. We allowed two other workers to stay and help. Everybody else, they had to vacate the place. And whatever offerings we offered, it was rejected. And I saw with my own eyes, the beer can that we were offering, the can just exploded and the beer just sprayed everywhere. Candles that we lit got blown out. And mind you, these candles were in an enclosed dorm with no wind, okay? At that time, my only concern was to pray that the spirit did not jump into my body, and I ended up bringing something home by accident. And so I remember I also started praying. Initially, we believed it to be Bob's spirit. But as the ritual went on, it became apparent that there were a few more spirits present as well. We learned that before our construction company took over, there was another company before us that gave up the contract and they left. They tried to clear the place and they managed to chop down one of the trees. Now, much later on, I met another foreman who had worked in that company and we exchanged stories. Now, that company, I tell you, was plagued with so many problems and accidents that they couldn't carry on anymore. Our company ended up taking over, but the spirits, well, they were already angered. And apparently I learned that also the bosses knew about these incidents, which is why that particular place was out of bounds. Now, Bob, well, at the end of the day, he was just an unfortunate victim. The spirits claimed that if they built upon their land, they would claim at least one life per year. And angry spirits, you know, that's not really a reason that I can bring to the bosses for us to break the contract and then end up losing hundreds and thousands of dollars. One option that the Shifu suggested was to build a large altar below the tree, which would open a gateway to hell in that area. Killa, we all knew that was a crazy idea, but here we are trying to get rid of spirits, and he's suggesting opening a gateway to hell. But what do we know, right? So the Shifu went on to explain that if we build an altar here to attract wandering spirits, then we can feed them to the ancient tree spirits as tribute. That way, the living won't be harmed. Like that also, Kana. The Shifu went on to do what was needed, and I suppose it worked. Because since that incident, we managed to avoid any more mishaps. The tree was left where it was, and the estate was built around it. But you know, this wasn't the only place of stories. There were many places. Back then, at new estates, as a patch of area that was surprisingly left untouched, or you might find trees with an altar beneath them. You look around, all these places have a story. Now, over time, people have forgotten what these places are for. And I've been back to some of these sites. Many of them no longer exist. But for those that do, the altar has grown bigger over the years and are not as scary looking as how it was back in the 80s. Altars back then openly prayed to underworld gods. Now you get colorful deities instead. But the purpose is still the same.
Supernatural Confessions was created as a safe space for people to share their paranormal encounters. If you or someone you know has a strange encounter to share, we want to hear about it. You can type it to us, send us a voice memo, or even meet me for a face-to-face interview. Visit supernaturalconfessions.com for more info. But every time I hear you laugh,
I get into trouble. Yeah. Beautifully read, Tim.
Thank you.
That will be my bedtime story this week. Okay, I will play it back.
You guys said that it's a long story, but trust me, I sat there and listened to Uncle Chan for almost 2 hours. This is
the one who transcribed it, is it? You transcribed it, is it?
Yeah. So a lot of times when
Wonderla, some of the people, English got typos, all grammar all off.
Yeah. Because it's not always that I get to put a phone or a camera in front of someone and get their confession. Most times, the minute you whip out your phone or whip out your camera, they stop talking.
Yeah.
So Uncle Chan is the old retiree. He likes to talk. But the minute I say, hey, Uncle, I want to record you, my la, then he stop talking. So almost like that, I just let them talk. I try my best to remember as much of the important details as possible and write it out. And some of the best stories really are when you unexpected, you go to someone and they ask you, oh, what you do, Eugene? Oh, this is 那个讲鬼故事的啦，那个 supernatural confession 啊，then hey, 我有一个鬼故事跟你讲哎，right? And then you like, I got, wait, hold on, I'm trying to record this. Please record lah. I will 跟你讲够了啦. So for those of you who don't understand Chinese or don't understand my Chinese is, you're that guy from supernatural confessions. Okay, Uncle got some story to tell you. Oh no lah, don't record lah. Okay, so. I have to actually listen 2 hours long, pay attention, then write it out. The minute they say bye, I take out my notepad and I write down in point form. So that's kind of what I do. Yeah.
And we have to appreciate Eugene for providing you know, supernatural confessions with this lifeline, right? This is the reason we are all here, because there are these stories and they're hidden away in strange corners, you know, and people who don't think they want to share or are not ready to share. And Eugene is always there with a listening ear and a comforting, supporting smile, you know, and then the stories just flow.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's not easy. You know, we had this conversation many times as well. I mean, there's a reason why it's also called Supernatural Confessions, because there's almost, you know, there's almost a little, it's like a dirty little secret, right? People need to be coaxed into revealing these things, confessing that they even admit to believing in the supernatural. Because, I mean, okay, these days I would like to think people are a little bit more open-minded, but as much as, you know, we all, there were many of us who may have had supernatural, you know, encounters in the past, there was always that fear. It was a little taboo to talk about it, right? People then start questioning, hey, are you sure you're all right? Not see, this person believe in ghosts, lah. And then you lose. So there was almost a sense of shame to it, right? So in order to even get people to feel comfortable with you enough to be able to coax them into telling a story and telling it confidently and going into as much detail as possible, that takes a fair amount of skill. So well done, Eugene Jay.
Thank you, guys. I've just been extremely lucky, I think, with a lot of people just, I think they know what we do and try to destigmatize the whole supernatural experiences, and they actually open up. I think it helps that I also have my own ghost stories and I survive from them. So it's almost like when they tell it to me, they know I'm not going to, are you sure? Is it true? Yeah. Because there's that whole fellow survivor thing. So with this Uncle Chan as well, I got to quantify this, right? So, and I always say this. All of us, Tim, John, me, everybody listening in, no matter how much we say we believe, we are all skeptics to a different degree. We believe, but then there's also the line where we go like, beyond this, we don't believe. But someone else is able to believe here, but beyond this, they don't believe. So a lot of stories that come by, I actually understand where it's coming from. Do I believe 100% of every single story I hear? Well, in my rational mind, and it's very natural, we try to put reasons into it. But we are not there. I'm not there. But in the case of Uncle Chan, when he's a retiree, he's sitting there, he's like, in my opinion, no reason to fabricate anything, no reason to milk anything off me. In fact, he just say, hiya, you believe in this kind of thing, let me tell you. It's almost like a, I kept this with me all my life because no one believed in me. You young punk, okay lah, let me test you. Because he didn't think I would believe. But here's one thing, right? When we come to bringing down of trees, and true story, guys, I just want to share this with you guys. I live in Pasir Ris. There is a BTO stretch under the MRT station. True story, MRT line, BTO stretch. Back then, there was a tree I could see from my room. They tore down everything else in the place. They could not tear down that particular tree.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I always get very interested, right, when people say, oh, you know, there was a tree and they couldn't tear it down, or they were trying to, you know, pull down this part of the expressway to do construction and they couldn't, for some reason, they couldn't do it. what do you mean that they couldn't do it? Like, what would happen? You know, like if they switched on maybe a bulldozer to try to bring out, what, the bulldozer would stop working?
So in the case of Uncle Chan, in the case of the Botanical Gardens director, when they try to cut down these trees with bulldozer, with chainsaw, the machinery would fail when it touches the tree. And or the person who cuts the tree or attempts to cut the tree will be met with an accident. Something would happen to the person.
During the at the point they were trying to cut down the tree or the night before?
At the point they cut down the tree, machinery will stop. They go back, they'll fall down, they'll sit down, they'll break their arm. An accident will happen. And it's occurred so many times, so often, that it has gone past the point of being purely coincidental into people actually believing it. So talking about Pantang as today's theme, it has gone from 80s, 90s, and Uncle Chan is a retiree. He's seen all this in the 80s. That was hardcore. Yeah. But people are still practicing it today. What I saw was in 2000, late 2000s.
I mean, like what happened to the other company, right? Before Uncle Chan's company, the construction company that got scared away, right? Because everything just went wrong, you know? And I think it's up to the next company to see whether they have precautions that can get them through this safely. If not, take the warning and go, you know? There's no winning this kind of situation. You know, I think when it comes to sites that are protected because there are spirits there, there are deities there, I'm absolutely a believer. You know, Singapore is full of places like this. I grew up near a tree that was like this in Tanah Merah. You know, there was a very, very old tree with a huge shrine and everything around it developed, but that one, no one could touch it. Finally, it disappeared. So something must have worked. They must have placated the spirit. Maybe they moved it somewhere. Right, and did the right ceremonies, you know, but it's always about negotiating, right?
Toa Payoh has one big one. Remember the Toa Payoh one? Toa Payoh Central? A huge altar. Right? And that
I
one
when
was...
When I was young, I remember that. Yeah.
What are you talking about? You're still young, Jonathan.
Thank you. I was setting up. Thank you, Tim. Well done. That's the mark of a professional. Yes. But yeah. Toa Payoh.
The other place that he told me, he told me a few places. I remember two. Toa Payoh was one, because I remember going to that place. And the other one is over at, what's that place? Tangling area, near Tangling, near the up the hill, past the American embassy, spot. There's a tree there with an altar as well. I said, these are places with trees that you cannot cut down.
Yeah.
When the tree is ready, it will lightning will strike it, but not before that.
Near my uncle's house in Kovan. Around Covent Garden, there was also one. You know, it was a lovely estate, and there was this humongous banyan tree that was growing out of control. You know, and by all logic, right, something should have been done about it for the sake of the neighborhood. But no, it was allowed to go rampant. It was, you know, right there because it was older than anyone here, any of the houses there. Nobody dared to touch it.
I mean, it's funny that we were talking about trees and how much respect goes into trees and the spirits that are associated with that. I was just having a conversation with one of my RPS Radio Paranormal Singapore teammates the other day, and we were talking about Bali, right? And in Bali, they truly believe in the spirits of the trees. Not so much. Not so much that they won't cut it down, but they will wrap like sarongs and cloths and beautiful pieces of baju around the tree. Now, I mean, if you go to Bali very often, right? There is a place, if you eat babi guling, right? And most people who go to Bali love to eat babi guling. It's like it's that suckling pig. And there is this place in Ubud, right? Which is called Ibu Okas, right? And Ibu Okas is this like multi-story, you know, shop house, right? And the funny thing about it is smack in the center of this place is this giant tree. And every time I went there, I'd be like, a place of business. You know what I mean? First thing you do is you cut down this tree, lah. You know what I mean? The amount of space is taking up and right in the center of your dining area. You know, you would have so much more space to put more tables, you know, extend your kitchen and stuff like that. But they just never did it. Yeah. In fact, if anything, they dressed the tree up and all that. They've kept it in that and they will build around it. Any renovations that go on around the tree. Never through the tree. They won't cut the tree. And that was the more when we study, we realized yeah, over there, trees are king. You know what I mean? They will they will build around. They will never cut down a tree for a building. They will build your building around the tree.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Because then, not only do you placate the thing, but you get them on your side. Whatever entity is in that tree is now going to protect you because you are part of the tree now. One of the things we often hear about possessions is superhuman strength, right? You know, and they're talking about the cuts, right? Forensically, I think in the story, right, the cuts that they saw and they examined were too deep to be made.
Yes,
by himself.
But, so even then, right? I'm like thinking, okay, you can talk about the mental issue of it, the psychological. Yes, I bore through the pain, right, and I carried on doing that. But I mean, just the physicality of it, the physiology of it, right? Mm-hmm. If you cut into, say, your carotid artery or something like that, and he was using a lot of strength, you know, with all that blood that's not making it to your brain, your body would just have collapsed. He wouldn't have been able to stand there for minutes just chopping away. He would have lost too much blood that his entire system would have just broken down. So the fact that he could have done it, I just don't understand the biology of it, you know?
I don't imagine he was chopping for minutes, You know, I think in that moment of terror, you know, expanded by the... tell it right, it feels, you know, cinematically it's very long, but I think it really would have been just a few chops and that's it. You know, the human body can't take more than that. You know,
I agree. So I mean, that was a little bit confusing. Once again, where was the camera footage? I mean, you know, security cameras and all that, right?
But I mean, it's impressive and slightly awe-inspiring, right, what these spirits will do to protect their land. You know, and how harsh they will be, right? And how, I think, how ancient and powerful this spirit must be if it wants, you know, one human life a year.
I like that it was, I mean, I thought it was interesting that he was so specific, you know what I mean? It wasn't just bad things will befall you. It was, I will take one life a year until you leave us alone.
So if you think about it from an investigative point of view, this is the voice of someone who's done it before, right? He's made these types of deals before, you know?
So, what I thought was really cool was the ingenuity of the Shifu saying that, okay, tree spirit, you need a soul, right? I put an altar here. You bring in all the wandering souls. You have a buffet on the wandering souls. You leave the living alone. How is that fair for the wandering spirits who just walk there, pick up the food to eat, and then cannot suck in by the tree?
Is that really what they do? Do you offer other souls, I suppose, wandering spirits, to feed a larger entity?
This is a rare story. It's a very rare case, yeah.
My understanding, again, this is not science, this is my understanding, is that the spirit realm deals with rules and deals with promises. So a soul is a soul. If I can outwit you and give you a soul, you have to let the living go. Because I forfeit my promise.
Yes, but I mean, that soul is not yours to offer, right?
To this situation, it was not even the fault of the guy who cut off his neck, but the tree spirit wanted a soul, period.
Hey, so, I know. But what I'm saying is, to then, you know, open up a gate to hell, right? So that the tree spirit could feed onto all these other souls. I mean, can you just feed onto random souls? No, what?
It's unethical for me. It's unethical,
it's
right?
Unethical,
Yeah, it's definitely unethical. On the Shifu side, I think it was a fix to the problem, but I think it will lead to much bigger problems later and much bigger imbalance, you know, in the spirit world, because what you're doing is you're aiding and abetting a rather villainous spirit, you know, who doesn't care whether it's feeding on the living or the dead, right? And it just wants to be fed. I think it will take greater spiritual forces to conquer that one. You know, it's something that Niu Tou Ma Mian have to come and take care of personally, you know, ox head and horse face.
But you see, I can also try to imagine how he's thinking, the Shifu is thinking. I am offering the souls of the wandering spirit to the tree, thereby reducing the haunting and the ghost level in the location. The living is unharmed. I am a hero.
Still unethical?
Right. I don't imagine you get good karma points for that. Yeah.
Because spirits have souls. Souls have spirits. Okay. You know? And they're not expendable, right? You know? But yes, it does protect the living, which I assume is the Shifu's first priority lah. Actually, when you mention Tibetan monks, right, there's a quite famous legend in Geylang. Right? Oh. I've heard it from at least three different hawkers, you know, and they say that there used to be a house somewhere in Geylang, they wouldn't tell me where, that was so notoriously haunted that, you know, armies of monks and mediums and priests have come and tried to do their thing and nobody could cleanse it, right? And apparently one year, there was a visiting Tibetan master, oh, right, passing through Singapore, right? And so they invited him to come down, you know, and many other monks and all that came to see what he would do, right? And he went in on his own. And when he came out, he said, oh, this house cannot be cleansed. And they asked him, what does that mean? He said, oh, it's a fire spirit. It must be destroyed, wiped off the face of the earth. It cannot be placated. It cannot be chased away.
And did he manage to destroy the
apparently,
spirit?
Apparently he did it.
What does that entail?
He and his team, nobody knows because no one was allowed to be privy to this, you know. But this is told as a legend, lah, you know. But I think what it does seem to suggest, right, and Alex Chu mentioned it in the comments, right, he hit the nail on the head. If you remember A Chinese Ghost Story starring Leslie Cheung and Joey Wong, right, it shows you exactly that kind of hierarchy. There are poor little spirits like Xiao Tian, who are servants and slaves, or in this case, food, to spirits like Lao Lao, who is an ancient tree spirit, who can build her own empire. And, you know, basically they can become the mafia of the spirit world until someone comes along and, you know, takes care of them, lah. You know, so I think there's all this exciting stuff going on, right, in the spirit world. There are rules, like Eugene says, but there are also rule breakers.
You know, on another note, sorry to interrupt there, right?
Yeah.
I just saw this message, right, from Mark. Was it Mark on the comment section that says, Tim always smiles when Geylang is mentioned.
Geylang!
That's because, I mean, Geylang is interesting for so many different reasons, right? And, you know, I'm always thinking, like, which hawker is this? You know what I mean? I half expect John to go, and by the way, right, this place was haunted next to this hawker, right, which does the best beef noodles, right? And I'm waiting for, like, food tips from this guy, right? But he doesn't get into it.
Those are the real secrets. You'll never hear those. Okay? Where the Tibetan monk had supper after he destroyed the demon, I will never tell. Okay.
Tim, I want to know, like, I know throughout all these years, right, that, you know, it's been, what, 2 years since the last time you hosted on SC with me?
Who are you talking to? Me?
Tim.
Yeah.
Have you had any experiences? Because you were the guy who, between ET and me, you were the virgin. Have you popped your cherry yet?
Thank you. You are so sweet. Actually, it's funny you should say it, right? I don't know if I mentioned this to you recently. Okay, do you remember when we, okay, like, a few years ago when we were doing this show, right? And I never took it very seriously when we were doing these things together. There would be people, random people on the Facebook Live who would say, hey, Tim, we are seeing things behind you and stuff like that. And, you know, we always didn't take it very seriously. We thought they were just, like, you know, taking the piss and all that, right?
I took it seriously. What are you talking about?
You did it, lah. You were the reason for most of that. But whatever, the funny thing is, right, that for the last how many, and I only found this out recently, okay? For the last 2 years, okay, my son apparently would be waking up every night and sometimes a few times in a week and he'd be crying. Or he'd come running out. And I mean, back when we first started, he couldn't really talk. Now he obviously talks a little bit more and he would come running out and he'd have, I had a bad dream, and he'd wake up, he'd be crying and stuff like that, right? He'd say, oh, I would dream of a ghost or a monster or something like that. And I mean, truth be told, I didn't really take it very seriously till one day I spoke to my helper who sleeps with him. And she says, for the entire time that she's come to work with us and she's been living in that room, sleeping in that room, she can't sleep. She just wakes up every night. This is the in this house, right? Which I never knew, right? And the only reason it actually came up was because there was one night where my helper had gone back to the Philippines and my mother-in-law came to stay. My mother-in-law is a very Catholic religious person, right? And so Charlie, my son, came to sleep in our room. She went to sleep in his room. And she said she just kept having these dreams. She kept waking up because she felt like she was being oppressed, right, spiritually. And so at that point, then that's when I was like, okay, you know what? I need to start asking these questions. Okay. I need to start asking my helper, like, what's been going on? That's when she told us that, yes, Charlie, he would wake up, he would have these nightmares. She wouldn't be able to sleep for like every night for the entire time she's been working with us. When she went back to the Philippines and she spoke to her family and she told them what was going on, even they said, usually if a child wakes up, sometimes if they vomit and they're having bad dreams, it's because something is starting to choke them. Okay. So all this happened within the last 3 months, by the way. And to be honest, part of me also felt a little guilty. It made me wonder, right, if maybe it, because of all this supernatural confession stuff that I started with Eugene, right, kind of brought stuff into the house, right? My wife was the first person to say it. She's like, Sila, you and Eugene Tay, see what you bring into our house. So eventually, right, okay, I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I actually called a priest, someone from church and all that to come and bless the house. And the funny thing is, and legit, okay, ever since the priest came to bless the house, my helper has had no problem sleeping at night. My son doesn't wake up anymore. And remember, this is not suggestion. I cannot suggest to my four-year-old son, okay? This is something, for some reason, he just don't wake up anymore, you know, and have those nightmares anymore.
Tim, why you never told me go to your house and investigate? Why you go and cleanse first? No, I got nothing.
I was scared you might bring something worse.
Oh, that's what I brought to Ivan's house the last time. Oh, man.
So, yes, there you go.
Anyway, no, it's good that you solved it. It's good that you solved it. Yeah. Wow.
Who knows? Now that we are doing SC again?
Oh, no.
Oh, what happens now? Then tomorrow I got to go and call the priest to come back again. Right?
You better keep him on speed dial, okay?
The wife is going to go, Sheila, Eugene again.
That's why. Always Eugene. If not, I tell you, haunted by the two Eugenes. If not Eugene To, it's Eugene Tay, right?
Well, it's been a blast, Tim, having you here. It just feels like the good old time. Especially with,
Thank you for having me. It's been a while since I did a live stream. I'm very excited. I said this in the past, you know, what your it's Alvin De Cruz, smooth operator, the Eurasian sensation, voice of the voiceless. You guys, does he still go by all the nicknames I gave him at the beginning?
Yeah, like, except the smooth operator today, I have to cancel it.
He's all right. But I mean, you know, I am very, very excited for Supernatural Confessions. I said this when you moved on to your next generation of Supernatural Confessions. I am very excited about seeing your new, I guess this will be your third generation of SC, the Facebook show. And to see what it happens. I only believe big things and better things happen with each generation. And now, of course, with you, with John, as much as I will miss your ghost mortem, I think you know, it's been a long time coming that you come onto this Friday show as well. I'm excited for only bigger and better things for SC. So thank you very much, guys, for having us. And, you know, if you are a big fan, remember the whole Supernatural podcast community is one big family here in Singapore. SC is awesome. If you want to add to your listening collection, you can always hunt down Radio Paranormal Singapore on Spotify, on all the different podcast apps. And who knows, maybe you can convince these boys to maybe guest appear on my show as well.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next Friday. I'm going to convince the boys tonight to go out for supper. But until next week, you're watching us on Supernatural Confessions Friday Night Live. Do check out our Spotify. Buy us a coffee if you like to. Or just, you know, hang out with us, click subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would do us a lot of help. All right. Oh, we always leave with a punchline, our own tagline.
It's Supernatural Confessions for Supernatural. Until our next installment, my name is Timo, and he is Eugene with what? Asking, is it the Hantu? That was your thing, right? You'd be like, Eugene, is it the Hantu?
Is it the Hantu?
And then with Jonathan.
I don't have a tagline. Okay. Yes, I do. Okay. It doesn't matter whether you believe in them as long as they believe in you.
I like that one. I like that one. I think, Eugene, you need to level up yours as well to match the awesomeness.
Okay. I got one.
Okay.
The greatest trick that the devil has ever pulled is to convince you that he doesn't exist.
Yeah, that was one of my best tricks. It was. Which means My name is Timo. I am the devil. Till the next installment of Supernatural Confessions, enjoy.
Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night.
I really don't feel good. I'm getting
a... Is anyone here?
What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.